Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 53. My name is John. You consider me the young apprentice, caught between the Scylla and Charybdis. Hypnotized by you if I should linger, staring at the ring around your finger. There's an old story, at least it's old to me because I remember hearing it back in elementary school. It's about a boy who is given a $100 bill. And he's walking to the store thinking about what he's going to buy. And he runs into a man who sees not only the $100 bill, but also an easy target. He says to the kid, "Hey kid, tell you what, I'll trade you that one bill for these two $20 bills, because having two bills is better than one." Well, maybe he's not too bright, or maybe he's just bitterly naive. But the kid briefly thinks about it and agrees that, yes, two bills are indeed better than one. So he takes the offer. The kid is proud of himself, and he continues on, but soon he runs into another man. The second man also realizes he has an easy mark, and he says, "I'll trade you those two $20 bills for these three $10 bills, because three is better than two." Again, the boy agrees because he believes three is better than two. Later on, another con man offers to trade four $5 bills, and the boy agrees. Finally, the last con man convinces the boy to trade for five $1 bills. The stupid or naive boy makes his way into the store, proud that he now has five bills instead of one. I'm sure it was told to us in school to teach us about the different denominations, but it is a mildly clever concept. If you don't know the value of what you have, then you risk losing it to something worth less. Such is the case with the United States of America, not understanding the precious value of freedom. While the erosion of rights began almost immediately after this nation was birthed, we have spent the past century forfeiting our rights in earnest. It would be easy and obvious to talk about the severe decay of our rights since the turn of the millennium. Indeed, most of that lost freedom can be tracked back to fear and our foreign policy. And there is so much to say on that front that I could easily go on about it for a few podcasts. It's so complex. But I'd rather, for the purposes of this podcast, talk about freedom that is traded in the name of misguided morality. So much is based on it. The interesting thing, though, is that the people most in favor of limiting these freedoms are usually the ones who don't care to participate anyway. They are morally against these things, so they feel they must save everyone else's soul along with their own and make things illegal. We'll get to a shining example of that later. But a recent study showed that the average American has no impact on government's policy. The American people in general have a minute influence. Corporations drive government policy. But should that surprise anyone? Capitalism has never been fully tried in the United States, but corporatism, that has been on the rise for the past century. And it has become so strong that the people, for all intents and purposes, have been shut out. The sad thing is, most people are so ignorant that they believe this crony corporatism we have is capitalism. And how did we get here? In part because of people's misguided morality. Oh my gosh, if that big company goes under, all those people will lose their jobs. And it will start a ripple effect that will damage all the other businesses that that big company influences. So that company is too big to fail. We have to take taxpayer money and give it to this company that has become nothing more than a colossal example of poor management. And people actually buy that line of garbage. Look, I've said it before and I'll keep on saying it. If a company has failed, it deserves to fail. When it goes under, those employees who performed well despite the company will find jobs at the competitors or start their own company, perhaps even go off to another field altogether. Any assets the company has gets absorbed into the other companies, just like the former employees. Other companies learn from the mistakes of the failure, and maybe, just maybe, smaller companies who are in that field, who have newer and or better ways to provide their goods and services, will finally have the opportunity to break through and succeed with the big boys. But when taxpayer money goes to prop up the failure, the smaller companies continue to struggle to break into the big time because the failure is still in the way. Employees who could be jolted into realizing there are greener pastures continue to toil away in the comfortable rut. And the fools who mismanaged the company to begin with get away with their failure. And they rest soundly, knowing that if they ever fuck it all up again, your government will gladly use your money to keep them afloat. But hey, you really believe that company is too big to fail, so the government has to do something. Oh, but those are the fat cat CEOs. Who cares about them, right? What about the poor schleps at the other end of the spectrum? We are a compassionate society, and those low-wage earners barely make enough to get by. It's a moral outrage. We need to do something about that. We need to raise the minimum wage. So let's artificially increase the wage to add to the cost of doing business and begin a domino effect that increases the overall cost of living, negating the artificial increase. Let's also make a starting wage so high that it no longer makes sense for a business to hire a new employee to do menial tasks that are worth less than the wage line. Now, without the opportunity to start at the bottom, to learn the importance of hard work to impress the boss, or learning to scrape by when times are tough, low-skilled people are prevented from entering the workforce. And once again, the moral outrage comes out. We must take care of these poor people that our society has let down. It is society's helicopter parenting tactics that caused this in the first place. Society in general, and to be honest, statists in specific, assumed that these people are incapable of getting by. So they ran to the government and bled their hearts out all over Washington until somebody flipped the switch and started the bureaucratic machine we have now. So the nannies' self-righteous egos were filled. The government got power and votes. And the poor, helpless entry workers discovered they were too little to fail. They are not forgotten, no. They will always be remembered when the government or the nannies need a pawn in their game of control. And Gina and I can both attest to barely getting by, to being in debt. Admittedly, some of it was of our own doing, but when you're just starting out, it can be a challenge to make rent and have money for food and a bus card to get around. So we did something novel. We worked two jobs. She had her day job, then a part-time job at night. I had a job during the week and a second job on the weekend. It was by no means ideal. It really sucked. But we did it. We did it when it had to be done to get by. But beyond that, what these poor pawns are told by the nannies, by the government, by the bureaucracy, is that they can't pull themselves up by the bootstraps. They can't even get themselves bootstraps to pull. And that, by and large, is a goddamn lie. If the nannies and the bureaucrats got the hell out of the way, people could make it. If we stopped mollycoddling people and treating them like fine china, they would learn, they would work, and they would prosper. You see it on the internet every once in a while, some meme about how kids were back in the day. You drank out of the hose, you rode your bike without a helmet or pads, you ran off with your friends without adult supervision for the whole day during the summer, you picked up dirty, disgusting things off the ground, you played games and kept score, you skinned some knees and broke some bones. You lived. It's the same way with people. Stop hovering over them with your foolish regulations and protecting them from every little possible failure. You will get a society that takes care of themselves. A free person will look for opportunity. And a free person will fail. Perhaps many times. But a free person who knows there is no nanny state will continue to try. Think of it this way. Would you rather play basketball against a bench player on a high school junior varsity team or the reigning NBA Finals MVP Kawhi Leonard of the NBA champion San Antonio Spurs? I just love saying that. Now, the answer will say a lot about you. If you pick the high school kid, you're saying that you want it easier for yourself. But if you pick Kawhi, well, you will certainly get your ass handed to you. But you will learn so much more. If you keep playing against the best, against tougher challenges, tougher odds, you may never get to that height yourself, but you will learn so much more from the tougher path. Now, who am I kidding? This says it better than any of my rantings. I am for doing good to the poor, but I think the best way of doing good to the poor is not making them easy in poverty, but leading or driving them out of it. I observed that the more public provisions were made for the poor, the less they provided for themselves, and of course, became poorer. And on the contrary, the less was done for them, the more they did for themselves, and became richer. That is a quote from Benjamin Franklin. And say what you will, but that was a man who did not take the easy way out. And it helped us get the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States, two of the most important documents in world history. We get so caught up in our emotions and compassion to help our fellow man that we forget there is an all too subtle difference between helping one through hard times and creating a dependency. But when you have nannies and bureaucracies that get off on the power trip, there's little hope they will ever see the error of their ways. So the government seizes control and stays in control for so long that people begin to think that that's the natural order. Find any kind of reason to push your version of a moral agenda. Demonize the people you wish to punish, and canonize the people you wish would vote for you. Sometimes the morality comes not from compassion to help, but an uncontrollable urge to prevent someone from making the wrong life choice. I've said it before, I'll keep saying it. I don't smoke marijuana. I have smoked. I can count the number of times I've done so on my fingers. I absolutely inhaled when I did smoke. The first few times I smoked marijuana, I felt no effects. I did not get the appeal everyone else did. The last time I smoked, I got so sick and was so afraid I would have a heart attack that I swore it off forever. A friend said I had an allergic reaction, but it's not like he was a doctor, so I don't know. I took 2 hits. I went into a house to watch a movie with everybody else, and while sitting down on the sofa, my heart began to race, upwards of about 200 beats a minute. I turned to my friend, and I told him what was happening, and that I was starting to get dizzy. Another friend said, "Let's get him some fresh air," and they helped me back outside. I thought of my dad, who battled heart problems for 20 years before finally succumbing. While the fresh air did help a bit, I was still disoriented. 2 of my friends stayed with me and tried to keep me focused. I felt sick to my stomach, and, sorry for this, folks, began to vomit. My friends helped me back up after I was done and fanned me in the cool night air, until I vomited again, and again, and again, and again. I stopped counting after the 12th time. I am quite hesitant to say it was the worst night of my life, but it was up there. My friends now know not to even bother offering. So not only was I inundated with just say no ads during childhood, I actually had a negative experience using illegal drugs. But if you think that would turn me into an anti-drug crusader, you really have no idea what this podcast is all about. I actually advocate for the legalization of marijuana. For that matter, all drugs. If you want to take it, take it. But here's the rub. You are solely responsible for the consequences of your decision. That is my only stipulation on legalizing drugs. You are solely responsible for your actions. That's it. That's the list. Now, some people who advocate for the legalization of drugs have more stipulations. You'll often hear the argument go something like this. We should legalize drugs because then we can regulate it so we know it's safe, and we can tax it for revenue. I know I've talked about regulation before, but let me tell you about a conversation I had a few months ago. I was having a discussion about government interference with a contractor. It started off by him irritated by a laborer who made a snide comment about how he had it easy. But that part of the story is for another time. I talked about how much more difficult his work is made by government regulation. But he said that the regulation was there to make sure that everybody was playing fair. Okay. I asked him if he was aware of anybody who was violating regulations. Oh yeah, he said. It happens all the time. I know some guys who will cut corners even if it means breaking the rules. Do you break the rules? I asked. Of course not, he tells me. I want to be known as the guy who always does a great job. But what if there were no regulations? I asked him. Would you still do a good job? Absolutely I would, he says. So, I asked, if you would do a good job regardless of whether or not there were regulations, and others would do a poor job despite the regulations, what good are they? He paused for a moment and he said, I see what you mean. And I'm sorry to say our wives distracted us after that, and we did not continue our conversation. Regulations are, by and large, crap. They exist only to grow bureaucracy, funnel more money to the government, and deter innovation. They are a false sense of security. What does that have to do with drug legalization? Just like with any other industry, the good people who want to provide a safe, quality product will do so regardless of the regulations. The bad people will put out unsafe and poor quality products no matter what the regulations are. You don't believe me? For every drug recall or food recall scare you see, there is a federal regulation that approved it before going out to the public. Despite that, failures still happen. But people are willing to trade their freedom to purchase a substance from whomever they choose for the fairy tale of regulation safety. But it gets even worse because not only are they hitting you with the regulation farce, they're getting you to trade another freedom as well. One of the most influential things I ever read was Francisco's money speech from Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged. coming from a background where it was drilled into me that the love of money is the root of all evil, and it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. It was refreshing to hear an opposing point of view that had not been previously filtered through a religious prism. Nor was it filtered through a statist's prism. I finally heard someone speak about money for what it truly is. A tool. I've spoken about it in podcasts before, but the way I sum it up is money is the physical representation of one's work and risk to be used as the middleman of trade. I know I am again repeating myself from a recent podcast, but bear with me. If you believe in the basic right that you own yourself, that you may do with your body as you please, so long as you do not interfere with other people's rights, then to follow a logical line, you must also believe that what you produce with your body is yours as well. If you take a rod and reel out to the lake and catch a fish so you can eat dinner, that is your fish that you earned through your effort. Likewise, if you get up every weekday and drive to a job for 8 hours a day and every other week collect a paycheck, that is your pay you earned through your effort. Logically speaking, all of it is yours. But that's not the way it works anymore, is it? No. 101 years ago, we went from a nation that believed you get to keep what you earned to a nation that says you have the right to forcefully take from people you envy. Now you must cede part of what is rightfully yours to the government. But it's not just payroll tax. It's any other tax, toll, processing fee, or other broad-based contribution the government can think of. The federal government used to be relatively simple. It could only do what Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution said it could do. Now it has massively abused those boundaries and changed its own restriction against income tax in order to get away with it. So, when a state like Colorado or Washington says they'll go ahead and make marijuana legal on the condition that they regulate it and tax you for it, what they are really doing is telling you that you can't have the right unless you trade it for another. You can't put this particular substance in your body unless you allow it to be filtered through a moronic bureaucracy that adds to the cost and surrender an extra portion of your rightfully earned income. Isn't that sweet of them? Well, what happens if someone screws up and sells you bad weed? Then you take them to court. See, the court system is something the government is actually supposed to provide the citizens according to the Constitution. There should be no bartering for freedoms. They are rightfully yours. The government has taken them from you. The legislative branch has said they can do it. The executive branch has said they can do it. The judicial branch has said they can do it. They are all wrong. The president says we need to sacrifice more. What he's really saying is the taxpayer needs to be sacrificed more. The Congress says we need to give more in taxes to support the needy. What they're really saying is they need to financially rape us to support their bureaucracy. The court says taxes are legal. What they're really saying is they are too feeble and impotent to stand up for the Constitution and prefer to get along with the new American order that takes rights away from the citizens. The Constitution says it's legal? Not originally it didn't. The 16th Amendment is a stain on the Constitution, and one of the worst things the government has allowed to happen to the nation. We've had other stupid things done to the Constitution, the 18th Amendment, for example. This nation was actually so short-sighted by its own self-righteousness that it banned alcohol. That is the antithesis of a free society. It didn't work. But the great thing about the 18th Amendment is people can realize a mistake was made and correct it. With the 21st Amendment, nearly 16 years of idiocy was ended, and a modicum of freedom was restored. Though some would argue that remnants of prohibition still interfere with that freedom to this day. But if one mistake can be overturned, that means other mistakes can be corrected as well. That means there is a remedy for this festering abscess of the 16th Amendment. The prohibition of all substances can be rectified so people can choose for themselves. The charade of needless regulation and government handouts can end. If people stop buying in to this line of bullshit the government and their toadies constantly feed us. If the people stop listening to media outlets that are little more than shills for either side of the big government duopoly. If we stop accepting what these would-be overlords say as sacrosanct and see it for the sickening fraud that it is. It's time the citizens of the United States woke up to the confidence game these charlatans are playing. We've been the pigeons in their scam for far too long. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.